Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton, and I care about oil. Actually, we all care about the price of oil, whether we like it or not. And this week, OPEC struck a deal that will ripple through oil markets for a while, markets of all kinds, probably. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries has agreed to its first oil output reduction since 2008. That comes after our freedom-loving friends, Saudi Arabia, accepted a big hit and dropped a demand that arch-rival Iran also slash its output. The deal also includes OPEC's first coordinated action with non-OPEC member Russia in 15 years. Now, if you have a salt shaker handy, grab it, because numbers from OPEC are about as clear as, well, oil. For instance, before entering this negotiation, Saudi Arabia had ramped up its production, probably so it could show others that it was ratcheting down its output as part of the deal. Here's our chat with a wealth and market analyst from Morgan Stanley.
Jeff Trom, Private Wealth Management, Managing Director, Morgan Stanley, Menlo Park.
We are going to dive into the oil market for a minute because we had an OPEC headline, the first one, first deal for a long time. It's about production. It's about stability in the oil market. And can you tell me in your words what your takeaways from that meeting were?
You're right. There was an agreement. It's been a long time. And it's very difficult for these agreements to stick together. There are incentives for the OPEC members to cheat, if you will. So some are skeptical that the deal will last a long time, but this is an effort to reduce production, thus increasing the price of oil.
Okay. I have to say, the OPEC has compelled me for years, even as a kid, frankly, because I grew up during stagflation in the late 70s. And I can't decide, is this a Romeo and Juliet? Is this a Capulet and Montague kind of play, or is this just a straight-up soap opera when it comes to OPEC?
Well, I think it is a soap opera. There are many conflicting influences here. For instance, with the lifting of sanctions, Iran is able to produce more.
Right.
They are bitter enemies with the Saudis. They're fighting wars in Syria, Yemen, against each other.
Right. Venezuela's in free fall because of the fall of the price of oil.
Exactly. And what's ironic is when the price of oil goes up, the U.S. production also goes up.
Uh-huh.
So that's a counterbalancing influence. The incentive for the U.S. technology to develop increases when the price of oil goes up. So our energy independence that's developed over the last 10 years significantly eats away at the ability of these countries to sell their oil, and they become a little bit less powerful.
Are we past the boom days for American oil production at this point?
No, I think it varies dramatically based on the price of oil. So when oil prices dropped, definitely the boom was over.
Uh-huh.
But the rig count starts to climb back again as the price goes up.
So you and I probably get the same email alerts or notifications on our smartphones. Every week we get the rig count that you just mentioned. And they have been climbing up. They tend to climb up this time of year anyway, but it seems like this spike was kind of anticipatory to the OPEC deal that did come down. So we were trading at about $40 a barrel before the deal. Right now we're trading right around $50 a barrel. Is there a Goldilocks price for OPEC to create this equanimity within the market so things can kind of settle for a while?
Well, anywhere in the 45 to 65 range,
okay.
And that's what they're targeting here.
Okay.
And many countries depend on oil for a significant portion of their revenue, including Russia. So Russia is not part of OPEC, but this OPEC deal is dependent on Russia cutting back.
Mm-hmm.
What are the odds that Russia is going to cut back dramatically?
It seems like OPEC data is about as reliable as Chinese data when it comes to their GDP. It's so opaque. How can you really know what's happening?
Well, I don't pretend to know exactly what's happening on that front. One other observation, though, is that recently, even before the election, U.S. interest rates were a bit higher than interest rates in other developed countries. As a result, the dollar was up. And the relationship between the dollar and oil is inverse. That is, when dollar is strong, oil usually weakens. And there's a long-term chart that shows when the dollar goes up, oil goes down. When the dollar goes down, oil goes up. And it's related. I'm not saying there's a cause and effect, but but it's correlated. Recently, the dollar's been strong. And then with the election, interest rates in the U.S. have gone up even further. The dollar's become even stronger. That weakens oil. And perhaps this is all a move to counter that influence.
Just
to shore up oil a bit in the face of a rising dollar.
Okay, because it looks like the uncertainty in the markets seems like is going to float the dollar as a strong currency for the foreseeable future. And so maybe this OPEC deal is what you're saying is maybe this OPEC deal is a bit of a hedge.
From their point of view, they're just trying to counter this. Yes, a hedge. They're trying to counter this dollar increase.
The Saudis went into this negotiation having recently cranked up their daily production by 1 million barrels a day. Then they go into this deal and they're like, oh, yeah, no, we'll crank it down. We'll take the biggest hit on production, even though they're still going to be pumping more than they were 6 months ago every day.
That's a great observation. What's also interesting here is that Iran's portion of production goes up, even though they're agreeing to some cuts as well. In the end, with the final deal, their portion of production is up, and that's not going to settle well with many of the other countries. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if there are changes down the road.
All right. You compared earlier in our chat the dollar to the oil market, and you made a point, and a very accurate point, of course, that is correlative, not causal. So let's stick with that for a second, just for a moment, if we could, because you mentioned interest rates as well. So the dollar is strong right now. Interest rates in America are a little bit higher than the rest of the world, mostly because the EU is playing catch up to our, let's say, aggressive fiscal policy coming out of the recession. So where do you see all of this kind of shaking out? And you can be as 30,000 foot view here as you want to, because I'm trying to get a macro approach to the oil market, the dollar, and the interest rates, because we have a meeting in 2 weeks with the Fed.
I think the other missing piece here is the fiscal policy. So with the election, the odds of fiscal policy stimulus have gone up. And Europe doesn't have that ability to have the fiscal stimulus the way the U.S. does. So that helps bump up expectations for GDP growth. Interest rates going up helps bank earnings. Oil prices going up helps oil earnings. The stock market has been struggling in the last year and a half because the earnings weren't there from banks and oil. Other sectors had terrific earnings, but the energy sector and the financials have a very large weighting in the equity market indexes. So earnings up helps the Fed on this path to increasing rates a little bit. Oil up tends to lead to inflation. We know that the labor markets are very strong, so to hire the next round of employees, wages may go up a little bit. The inflation expectations up, earnings up, more stability in the U.S. markets, stimulus from fiscal, all leave room for the Fed to increase rates a little bit.
Okay, well, there's
and that doesn't mean it's going to be dramatic. The market reaction has been fairly dramatic on interest rates. I don't expect the Fed's reaction to be that dramatic, but I think that there is a path to increase.
So this 0.25% increase that 90% of analysts expect to happen this month has been priced into the market?
It seems to be, and there seems to be stability. When this happened the same time last year, it created lots of instability. I don't know if you remember the drop in December and in January. It was fairly dramatic. It was about 10% in the equity market.
Yeah, it was a correction. It was correction territory.
Yeah, and everything was on the edge enough that the Fed had just held off. But I think the promise of fiscal stimulus helps solve this conundrum.
Okay. Jeff Trom.
And there does seem to be expected growth in the U.S. We'll see if that happens. If tax rates drop, that leads to better earnings as well.
Help me understand one thing, Jeff. You mentioned that the earnings for the banks had been down, but as a sector, financials are up about 116% over the last 5 years. So is that just share price valuation, or is that just like speculation in the markets for financials moving forward? How does that play out?
Earnings have actually been up a little bit, but lagging. They haven't been growing dramatically.
I see.
And now there is the ability to have earnings go up more dramatically with the increase of interest rates.
You know, we haven't done this in a while. I wanted to call this segment Beer with Jeff, but it's 7 in the morning, so I'm going to skip that part. What did I forget to ask you that you wanted to include, Jeff?
I'm usually very optimistic, and I was surprised by the election and surprised, frankly, by the market reaction. But it does seem that there are a number of factors coming together that help corporate earnings, and that is nicely reflected in the stock market right now.
Are you expecting a robust Santa Claus rally this year?
Oh, the short-term predictions, I think, are hard to make, but we've already had a very nice rally. In the long run, I expect things to be nice, and I also see that these earnings influences are generally positive. The strong dollar, though, weakens exporters, and a huge portion of our economy is based on exports and trade. So that's an unknown that we'll have to keep an eye on.
That was Jeff Tromm, a wealth manager and market analyst with Morgan Stanley. And that's going to do it for this week's show. We had Nolan Bushnell talking about virtual reality out of doors, as well as his legacy of founding Atari. Then we talked to an arcade owner who showcases those older video games for younger audiences. And, of course, this soap opera that is OPEC. We have links to all of these segments and all of our segments, actually, at kgoradio.com/techonomics. We also post related links, resources, and a playlist of the music we use each week. Those are found at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And you can reach us with story ideas and comments on that Facebook page as well. Thanks for listening this week, and we hope you'll join us next week as well. You can follow me at KGO Jason, by the way. I'm Jason Middleton, and for producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, this has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.